Welcome to the Ion Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Roll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. It's Friday. Ethan Sherwood Strauss is joining us. Ethan, how's it going?
It's going pretty well. I like how you're something of an auctioneer when you begin these. You're going, Pick and Roll Podcast, oh, Pick and Roll. Da, 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 da. It's just really smooth. I enjoy
it. Yeah, I like to get through it. Get through the intro. I used to love that Micro Machines guy who would talk so fast during the commercials. I never knew what he was saying, but I saw miniature cars, and I thought, hey, I want those.
That's a great model for you.
Really, Micro Machines were like the, not to sound sexist, but let's, you know, if we're going to go by gender roles, Micro Machines were the littlest pet shops for boys, right?
What's funny about that is your Skype connection cut out, and you said sort of the P word, and it blanked out. So really,
I said
where you went with that.
Lilla's Pet Shop, the pet shop.
Oh, the Lilla's Pet Shop. Okay, yeah. Okay, yeah. That's plausible.
So yeah, Micro Machines were the littlest pet shop for boys. That's what I would say. Okay. If we're gonna go with our strict classic gender roles.
Yes, I would agree, Zach.
Okay. I don't know how to transition into basketball from that. I'd actually just like to talk about Micro Machines for a while, but I guess we could.
You always need a segue.
I always need a segue. Hey, you know what's driving through the lane right now?
Oh, what?
Basketball.
I thought you were gonna go with Anthony Davis.
Oh, we could go Anthony Davis. Rose. Anthony Davis is driving through the lane. Only he doesn't really drive. He just cuts and he rolls and he. Oh, he's rolling. You can roll with the car. No, he doesn't really drive. He didn't have many isolation. He didn't dribble a whole lot.
And I say that because he's in New Orleans, where the French language isn't so weird to use randomly. So, hey, look, he does look a little like Kevin Durant sometimes when he drives down the lane. It seems as though it takes him one dribble to get from the three-point line to the rim. And, man, it also seems like he's gearing up for some sort of superstar season, possibly, perhaps, maybe, possibly. Not sure.
We wouldn't know because there's barely any footage of Anthony Davis from preseason. It's almost impossible to find the game on TV.
Well, I call New Orleans basketball Siberia because it is the NBA's smallest city and there's not a ton of basketball interest. So occasionally you get something like a Zapruder film coming out of there. It's grainy. You know, you think it might be Anthony Davis, but whatever that shape is doing, it looks pretty cool. Whatever that strange sort of Sasquatch footage we have of him looks pretty good.
It does look good. I mean, he's scoring a lot, right? He's got like 26 points a game in like 23 minutes or so. I don't know. Maybe I'm making those numbers up, but that's what it feels like.
You might be making those numbers up. Last night, he was kind of eh. It wasn't the best performance. The other four before that were awesome. It seemed as though he got a little bit tired. He's not exactly a banger in the post, and that might prevent him, that lack of strength, and frankly, maybe even lack of conditioning might prevent him from being an all-star this year. But I am excited. Even if he didn't deliver defensively last season, the offense is so far ahead of what we expected. It seems as though the only thing he doesn't have is an off-the-dribble jump shot.
Well, he doesn't have a post game, and I don't know how necessary that is. Well, right. I don't know how necessary that is, but I mean, even like having that mid-post game that guys have, like LeBron has developed, that Dirk has, that Kevin Durant has. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe that's not a fair comparison to throw him up against those kind of all-time great players, but he is, you know, a number one pick, which comes with expectations. And he wasn't just like a default number one pick. Like, he was the guy people were angling for. So yes. There is this franchise player expectation when it comes to him.
It's so funny that he becomes automatically less famous going from Kentucky to the pro basketball to the New Orleans Pelicans. Now nobody talks about him or knows about him. But yeah, it does come with some expectations. That post game can help him. You know, I'm a fan of the post game not being about just bulk or size. That's what we associate it with. It can also just be used to sort of get somebody off balance, to give them a different look, a defender. And he has a great handle for a big guy. So if he just gets them in the high post, that allows him to spin off his man and dribble for a layup. That could really help him.
Oh, certainly. And that's kind of what I mean. Like, when I look at post game, you know, I think of, all right, Kevin Garnett was the same build, right? Now, I think Kevin Garnett is a lot more skilled than Anthony Davis, even at that age, at least offensively. But that's supposed to be like the model. So KG was this thin guy who needed to add bulk so he could bang, but really he didn't add in much bulk. He added strength. Like he kind of had that old man steel worker vice grip strength where he wasn't pushing guys out of the way, but he was holding his ground, and then he could get his move off without really being bothered. And that's really what Anthony Davis needs to develop. I mean, if he put on 30 pounds of muscle, which I'm sure is happening in the next offseason because all players do that, but if he was putting on 30 pounds of muscle, I don't know that it would actually benefit him, because that would make him kind of clunkier. And his game is one of agility and gliding. And
yeah, I agree. I wish that we knew the grip strength of players at the combine, because I actually once did job testing where at a college you can get this testing done to see what sort of job suits you. And I had my grip strength tested. Man, grip strength is tough to say.
It's not easy.
You know, if you ever pulled over for a possible DUI and the cop asks you to say that, you're just not going to fare very well. You're going to jail. You're winding up in the drunk tank saying grip strength. It's very difficult. But mine was incredibly weak. And the reason that they test you is because apparently people in construction jobs, people are very physical. That's a great indicator. So we might even be able to learn something from players doing the grip strength.
Yeah, and it would be, I mean, especially I would think when it comes to, like, wondering if a guy is going to turn the ball over, right? I mean, especially for a post player,
yeah,
like,
definitely.
Having them bring the ball down, having someone swipe at it, and I don't know if you can test that, because if you hit their wrist accidentally and break their wrist, you know, there's some liability there. But yeah, there should be some kind of at least known grip strength to know, like, how strong these guys are, because you could be as strong as you want with your upper body, but if your hands are bad and your hands aren't strong for holding the ball, like, what does that do for you? I mean, it still does stuff, but I think it's a valuable skill.
I would agree, and I would venture to say that Michael Beasley's left hand grip strength far better than his right hand. That's just through a source. It's through source to Zach.
Okay. That would mean that Michael Beasley
should leave me hanging.
Well, that would mean that Michael Beasley is left-handed, unlike you said last time. You think he's right-handed?
No, I'm pretty sure. Now you're switching it up. No. Oh my God, you're right. That is why you paused. I went the other way on this.
Yeah, you screwed it up. You screwed it up like you were trying to say grip strength
on my part.
Yeah, that was you kind of left that one out there.
Well, you know, we start this podcast at around 9 a.m. It's already happy hour out here in the West Coast.
So I wrote about Anthony Davis, which I think is why we're talking about him. I wrote about him for CBS yesterday, Thursday, and broke down his offensive game. And he moves incredibly well without the ball. And I wonder, let's say he doesn't develop an isolation off the dribble game. Let's say he doesn't develop a post game. And he's just as good offensively as he is. I mean, he'll get smarter with spacing, but he's already really good with spacing. Let's say he's just an off-the-ball weapon, like a Tyson Chandler. Is that enough for him to be a franchise guy, a number one player for a team?
Well, that's a great question, because I'm a big fan of basketball minimalism. Minimalism, also very hard to say, I would say.
Sure.
And I love what Tyson Chandler does. When healthy, he is around the top center in the league. Maybe not so much with Dwight coming back and if Dwight's healthy, but right at that level, because you can almost hurt your team by trying to do too much. And we tend towards saying that a center that has a high usage rate is better because he has more responsibility. But maybe Tyson is better for a team just by being so much more efficient in his small role. So I would say that, yeah, if that's just what he does, and all he does when he gets the ball in the perimeter is ball screens and not so much of a post game, but he kills it on the alley-oops and on the putbacks and he shoots over 60%, sure, he could be a superstar if he's doing that and combining it with excellent defense.
Yeah, because maybe, well, actually, this is probably not a good example, but what I immediately thought of is, what if he's Dikembe Mutombo, but not trying to post up like Dikembe did? Like, Dikembe could post up a little, you know, he was a decent post player, he was good enough to throw the ball into, you know, 10, 20 times a game, but really, if he had just been a guy that spaced the half court by moving off ball so well, he probably would have been a better weapon, because he just wouldn't have been like this guy you feel forced to throw it into the post and let him, you know, kind of slow things down.
Oh, I agree. I also believe that Davis is and will be more skilled offensively than Mutombo. Mutombo was a kind of underrated when you look back at it. People talk about that Allen Iverson finals team as though nobody else was on it, and it's, well, you know, they kind of had Mutombo. Why do we forget about him?
Yeah, I mean, he was, at least defensively and rebounding wise, he was amazing, right? Like, he's an all-time defender, and he's an all-time rebounder when you look at him relative to the era he played in, right?
It was a great combination to have Iverson, who, and there is value to getting shots at the rim. Those are more easily rebounded than far shots, you know, the famed Kobe assist. So you get a guy who's getting towards the rim a lot, and he's going to handle a lot of your offense, and then you have Mutombo with the defense and the rebounding. That's one of those duos, maybe because it was short-lived, that we just don't talk about as being utterly synergistic. I love that Iverson-Mutombo combo.
Well, also, didn't it allow Iverson to gamble like he liked to do on defense? Because you've got Mutombo behind you, so...
I thought you were going to say in general.
Well, yeah, in general. I don't know if I can even tell this story. I'll tell it vaguely. I was at a casino in Vegas one time, and one of the blackjack dealers just regaled us with stories of Iverson coming through there, and let's just say the dealer was not a fan. He had some issues.
Yeah, I've heard similar stories. It seems as though Iverson's competitiveness translated to saltiness when it didn't go his way at the blackjack table.
Yeah, well, yeah, that, I would say that's an accurate description. But yeah, it allowed him to gamble on the court. Because he could just play passing lanes, and you have one of the best shot blockers of all time behind you.
Yeah. And, you know, I do think that Mutombo doesn't get his proper credit in that team, and also we just don't celebrate them. For some reason, we have celebrated and heralded this this Marbury-Kevin Garnett duo of your youth, and we've ignored this Mutombo-Iverson duo.
Well, because that was that should have been a better duo. And it wasn't due to selfishness, it was more drama, and it's not that it didn't work, it's just that it didn't get a chance to work because of dueling personalities and dueling contracts.
And I also think that we took some years to figure out that Marbury wasn't that great.
Yeah, it wasn't that good.
There's some lag.
I think as a primary player, not that good. Maybe if he had KG to take the bulk of the load throughout the game, he would have been the closer, because I feel like he was a pretty decent clutch player. I'm sure there are stats to completely refute that, but that's my feeling based off of what I remember from my youth.
Yeah. There probably are stats to completely refute that, but back then I thought Marbury was pretty good. You know, I didn't know any better. It seemed like he had some talent. It also seemed like he got derailed a bit, where he could have become a better player had things worked out differently for him. So he got on the wrong trajectory.
Yeah, he got on the wrong track, and that track led to New Jersey.
It always leads to New Jersey. That's always an issue. I'm wondering, Zach, and not to steer this. I want your segues on this. I don't want mine because I don't even use segues. I want professional, clean broadcasting. But in this instance, how do you feel about that Carmelo Anthony 14 ranking, or is it 15 ranking?
I honestly I hadn't seen it, but 15, that's a little low to me. I think he's like a top. I mean, I think you can make an argument he's a top 10 guy. I think he's probably more safely a top 12 guy. I would put him in that range. 15's a little low, but it's still respectable. I mean, being the 15th best player in the NBA is not anything to turn your nose at.
Yeah, it's not anything to turn your nose at. And how do you feel about Kyrie Irving, though, ranked above him? That was a little bit surprising to me. I'm curious about this whole Kyrie Irving thing.
Yeah, that's a mistake. If Kyrie Irving is ranked above Carmelo Anthony, wait, was he? I thought he was 19th.
Kyrie Irving, I believe, is ranked above Carmelo Anthony, not on the CBS one, perhaps, but on the NBA rank.
Oh.
Now you're scaring me a little bit. Like, we're just going to get a whole bunch of feedback that I was an idiot and that's not true. But I believe that's so, and I think that what's so interesting about it to me is you could argue that this season, the one after his rookie season, was a little bit of a disappointment and not as good as the season prior.
Yeah, I mean, with him, you know, we talk about injuries. He's an injury concern waiting to happen. He's just... He's really good, but I think he's gonna be phenomenal in this league. But I don't see how you can feel confident that he's gonna be there year after year for 70 plus games plus playoffs.
He has the type of game that sells a shoe. That type of game will sell a shoe. And he's also just incredibly talented. Few players have been as productive as he is, as young as he is. But it is funny that there is this incumbency when it comes to rankings where even if you don't improve as a young player on the season before, you're just kind of around. More people are hearing about you. More people are getting a chance to see you. So just by virtue of that happening, that's going to help your rank. And I think that's what's happened with Irving.
Are you a little worried about our argument from a couple of years ago that John Wall will be better than Kyrie Irving, which I contended and you refuted?
Oh, I am a little worried. I'm shaking in my boots.
Yeah,
John's got
some momentum right now, doesn't he?
He does. He does. Just like when he's on the court, he's got some serious momentum behind him. I am a little worried. I am a little worried about him doing that. At the same time, I don't get why the Wizards had to give him that deal a year out. I feel as though the bad teams are the ones who give the max contract a year before they have to do it, and it's because they're worried about placating that particular star and just hurting his feelings. I just think, so, you know, DeMarcus Cousins, why not wait a year? Why not have a whole lot of other information on which to base your decision? Because really, the system is stacked in your favor, and you'll be able to retain him anyway. And all this stuff about, well, this is going to be a distraction, and it's going to be really hard because this guy is an emotional guy, as we see with Cousins, not so much with Wall. As we see with Cousins, and not necessarily with Wall, there's this narrative of, oh, he's so emotional, so you can't let it hang for a year. But if he's so emotional, then do you want to entrust all that money to him? It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
Ah, now this is where Matt and I talked about this the other day, which I do not, I don't have a problem with guys being emotional. I think there's irrational emotion that you should steer away from. But
I totally agree with you, Zach. I cried during Gravity. I just want to let that out here.
I haven't seen it yet, so don't let me know that there's a cry-worthy moment.
I'm just saying, guys being emotional, we shouldn't be so negative about it. I'm just saying that if that's the concern and if that's the worry,
I think maybe what you're looking for is irrational, not emotional.
Yeah.
I would
angry emotion.
Yeah, angry emotion. This is irrational. Yeah, I think that I don't have a problem with them giving Wall, I think it's pretty obvious he's been their plan for a while, and I think he's been good enough to show, like, all right, a max off of your rookie deal, that's not franchise crippling in any way. You can afford one of those deals to a pretty good player as long as you can still get another really good player. And even if he just ends up being a pretty good player, it's not like he got a, you know, 5-year, $120 million
It's not an arenas deal.
Yeah, it's not an arenas deal.
The rookie max extension, it's a different kind of max.
Yeah, if he had gotten like the Rose rule where they get like that 30% increase instead of the 25% of the cap or whatever it is.
I love the Rose rule. It sounds like something out of Dungeons and Dragons.
You know, I don't know if this will get me kicked out of blogging. I've never played Dungeons and Dragons, and I don't really know what it is. I don't really know what I really don't know what role playing games.
It looks really cool.
Yeah, I really don't know what role playing games are.
Well, you know, neither do I, but I feel as though it would just fit in really well. It just sounds very fantastical. The Rose Rule, I love it.
Yeah, but because it's not that Rose Rule max extension, I don't think it's really that big of a risk. I think maybe the Cousins one is more of a risk, just because, you know, he is definitely someone who's clashed with everybody in that organization so far. And now you've got a new regime, you got new owners, you got a new management, you got a new coach. You know, you can start fresh with him. I don't know that you should necessarily hold his past with a past regime against him. But you do still have to be kind of careful of really, you know, poisoning the water, so to speak.
Yes, you do have to be a little careful of poisoning that Sacramento River. I do agree. How have you felt about his preseason? He's had some moments. I think his last game, he looked pretty beastly.
Yeah, he's really good. Like, I feel like people kind of scoff when I say that, but DeMarcus Cousins is a really, really good basketball player, and he's capable of putting up some really good performances. Now, can he be consistent, and can that lead to wins? You know, that a lot of that's going to depend on the players around him, but he does actually have, you know, a distributing guard now. He has, you know, I think maybe more of a structure than he's had in the past. he's claiming this is the first offense he's played in the NBA, which I find hilarious. You know, I think that this is him. Like, I think he'll have some ups and downs, but I think it'll mostly be ups on the court, and you just have to avoid like the downs coming in the locker room.
I'm really curious about it. With him, they said, "Hey, you got to pay for size," so that's why he's going to make all this money. I'm not sure if you're exactly paying for what size gets you normally. You're not just paying for size in the abstract. You're not just paying for somebody who's big. You're paying for what comes with that, which is often stellar defense. Now, Cousins obviously has the rebounding that comes with size, but if the defense isn't there, it's an open question as to whether or not you want to give a lot of money to bigs who don't guard. So I think that is my main worry when it comes to Cousins.
Yeah, and that's fair. I mean, they're still restructuring the team. I don't think they'll keep a lot of the guys they have under contract right now, in the next 2 or 3 years. And then at that point, can you put a power forward next to him who's a really good defender? Yeah, I think that's doable.
It is doable. I'm a little concerned about you though, Zach. I mean, you're saying things like, "Yeah, that's fair." You're accepting my points. Where's the fire? Where's the guy who argues with me? What's going on?
I still don't know that I can really talk about it that much. But my car was involved in an incident this past week, so I've been dealing with that all week, and it's really just destroyed my week. In terms of productivity and the ability to think, I think you'll notice on the podcast this week, I stammered even more than usual because I just can't put thoughts together, man. Because I've been dealing, like, I've got 100 things going through my head right now. It's not a big deal. It's going to work out. It's going to be fine. But that's just, it's thrown me off. Normally I'd be calling you an idiot right now and be ready to hang up the Skype.
I know. I could tell. I could sense something was wrong. Yeah. I was afraid.
Yeah, it's a distraction. It's a mental exhaustion. I babysat last night. Steve McPherson's child, and that kind of recharged me a little bit. And maybe I don't have as much anger because I was around an adorable child.
Well, I question Steve's judgment. That's an odd way to handle
it. It wasn't just me. It was my lady. She volunteered us.
Okay, so there's some backup.
Oh yeah, there's some backup.
Some backup, if you will.
Yeah, I did. I took care of the playtime. I took care of the bedtime story. She handled everything else. It was great.
Okay. Well, I will throw a segue at you though. You have this distraction, and it's impacting how you do your job. How do you feel about these players and these teams going all the way out to China and other places during their training camp and their preseason? Do you think that hinders their mission?
You really don't like this. You like. I'll say this. They're here now. Now you've gotten the old Zach back. You like.
I'm a basketball xenophobe.
You like to throw shots at the league office. That's clearly on record.
I thought you were going to say the country of China.
Well, yeah, that too. I mean, you're not a big fan of...
the nation of China.
Yeah, but in terms of the league office, you like to find things they've done here and there and just be like, nope, that shouldn't happen. This has been happening for a long time, though, hasn't it? This isn't anything new. Maybe the volume
of global games, I believe. Yeah, the volume of the global games. I don't understand why the Warriors are playing the Lakers 80 times in a row. I don't get that. You know, I woke up at 4:30 a.m. for the first one in China, but then they just played the Lakers again. I'm not going to wake up at 4:30 to watch a boring Lakers team with Harrison Barnes. He's out with whatever foot inflammation is, so I'm not even seeing him play.
Sure.
I'm not going to wake up for that again. Come on.
The foot inflammation.
Well, my thing with all this is that I think it's wonderful that the NBA expands internationally. That's great. That's a good goal. I love basketball. I want more people to love basketball. I love the NBA. I want more people to love the NBA. But no league does more patting itself on the back and congratulating itself on how global it is in the NBA. And it's an open question as to what they're getting from it and whether or not they're even that successful in their mission. I mean, by a lot of metrics, baseball is more popular internationally than basketball, but yet we keep acting as though the NBA is the global league and this is the great Stern legacy. And I'm not sure if I exactly buy it. You know, they built a bunch of stadiums.
What metrics are you talking about that show baseball is more liked internationally? What metrics?
Google hits and revenue. I mean, baseball gets more revenue. Now, part of that is just the countries it's successful in. I mean, Japan is a very wealthy nation, so that skews it just a bit. It's also a nation with 126 million, so that helps as well. But, you know, we don't really know how popular basketball is in China versus some of the other sports. You know, soccer is clearly making inroads there, for instance, and we don't know what that will even mean going forward, because we're dealing with a society that's not that open. They don't even have Twitter, and a lot of people in China, the majority of people in China, don't even have internet access. So yes, there are a whole lot of people there, but it's a fairly Byzantine structure when it comes to the TV rights and how that's dealt with. The NBA has never provided me with solid evidence that they're getting any kind of money off that deal.
Yeah, but have you asked? Have you asked the NBA? Are you submitting formal requests?
I've actually sent emails asking, but I can't get that info. You know, I've asked Mike Batts that, I think probably a year or so ago. But So I don't know, and I will just put it at an I don't know, as opposed to they're losing money or hemorrhaging money, because I'm not sure. But I just think it's so easy to talk about this as a grand success, and we don't really have the information to tell us if it is.
Well, I think if you think, like, it's, they've been doing this for a long time, but they, you know, I would say since the internet has become a popular tool for the NBA, that's really when the efforts have been ramped up, and we've noticed it more with the international attempts to grow the game. I think that this is a something that takes time to ingrain yourself into a culture, correct? Mm-hmm. And so this is something with, the best example I can think of is Dream Team goes to Barcelona in 1992.
Yeah, that was huge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
13 to 15 years later, or, you know, maybe 10 to 15 years later, you know, Lithuania is a powerhouse now. I mean, they were always really good, but, like, they become a powerhouse. Argentina gets into the international flow of it. Like, it takes time to develop these kind of global influences. And so maybe 5 years from now, we'll say, this is why they were in India. This is why they were in China. This is, you know,
it is fascinating. I don't know. Strategic inspiration.
Yeah.
It's almost like you're doing a military campaign of inspiring children.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it's like.
Hit him here. Oh man, and that's what the Warriors are doing right now. Their training camp is in China. I just worry a little bit on their behalf. I know the Warriors don't worry about me, but I do worry a little bit on their behalf. They had such a good mission going. They had a good everybody had shown up early the training camp, hard practices. It's difficult to keep that up and to do what you need to do when you're taking this detour all the way on the other side of the world. And already we have Andrew Bogut having back spasms, which to me, Zach, proves that it's the detour, because, I mean, Andrew Bogut, healthy as a horse, never gets injured. I mean, obviously that's the China trip.
Yeah, he is that sign in any workshop that says so many days since last incident.
indeed, man. So you can just tell. You can just tell right there.
Yeah, definitely can. I like the global outreach. I think it's probably much easier to do the trips to, you know, Brazil and, you know, they venture into Canada quite a bit outside of Toronto, you know, going into
those
Central
all
and
the
South.
Countries that you had on your head.
No. I'm trying to think of, like, the easier, like, logistical ones in terms of time zone. When you're changing, you know, 17, 20 hours of time zone, that's when it starts to wear. If they go into, you know, they go into Europe to do these things, it's a little easier. It's not that much easier, but it's a little easier to kind of adjust the players to these huge changes in the schedule.
I agree. Brazil's a problem because it's just the amount of partying, I think,
sure,
that you're worried about, even though it's the same time zone. I'm curious about how that's going to go in the Olympics, because we've benefited as basketball writers from how NBC, and I'm just going to say it, doesn't really want to promote basketball. It's not their sport. They have hockey. So what we end up seeing in the Olympics, and we saw last Olympics, is that there's almost no promotion for the basketball team, which which is oddly, ironically, good for us as basketball writers because they just stick it on that NBC Sports Channel at 12 o'clock and we don't get hit with the tape delay. You know, they're tape delaying the sports that they want people to watch in primetime and they're giving major pub to. But when it's going to be in Brazil, I don't know what they're going to do with it. They just might bury it somehow, since the games are going to be during that prime time without the time zone shift.
Yeah,
I worry about weird things. This is years in the future.
Yeah, this is a couple of years from now, but I would expect.
You should worry about it now, Zach.
I wonder. Like,
build your bomb shelter.
Let's say something terrible happens and CBS gets outbid for the NBA's rights. In 2016, 2017, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess it's up in 2016, right?
Yes.
So it's up around the time of the Olympics. Maybe, I mean, it would almost assuredly be before. But if NBC, by some horrible
chance.
It'll be negotiated
before.
Yeah, for some reason, NBC gets the rights again, we may see it a huge promotion of it like we've never seen before, because the channel with the Olympics will also have, you know, one of the Olympics' most popular and sexy sports outside of track and field.
That's what people don't get about it. I hear these excuses for why it's not promoted, and it's, oh, well, the Dream Team is a special thing, and it's really more of a, you know, swimming is what, like, no, this is arbitrary. It's arbitrary. We have this guy who's good at swimming, so they promote the hell out of it. And they would just promote basketball like crazy if they owned NBA rights.
Oh yeah,
but they don't. So that's how it goes. And I'm not hating. I have no problem if I was running NBC. That's what I would do. But that's how it goes.
Yeah, don't even get me started on swimming. the medal system.
Swimming and hockey.
Yeah, no, I'm fine with hockey. The medal system drives me crazy though. The fact that Michael Phelps becomes one of the greatest Olympians of all time because, you know, swimmers get a medal chance if they put their swimsuit on correctly. I mean, they have so many different events. That,
based on the intelligence of a lot of swimmers, that might actually be a pretty good competition. I want to see if Ryan Lochte can actually pull that. Well, I pull that on, not pull that off. If he can actually do that on his lonesome.
Back to the international thing, you should be happy. There are going to be, you know, millions of people in Asia looking for Warriors coverage because they're going to fall in love with the shooting exploits of the team, and you're the person they're going to go to.
Are they going to get my references? I hope nothing's lost in translation.
I don't know.
Nobody actually thinks that there's a player named Bazemore's wingspan.
Yeah,
you know?
I don't know if there's a lot of Yiddish translation.
I don't think I tweet in Yiddish, Zach. I don't think that happens. But who knows? Maybe this will help expand the popularity out to Israel.
Yeah, maybe.
The Yiddish pockets of it.
Yeah, maybe. I think this is a good thing I think as long as it's not getting to a point where it wears down teams so much from all the travel that they're more susceptible to injury risk, it's fine.
Yeah.
And if they give them enough time, I mean, they're gonna give them over a week or about a week to between coming back in the regular season, the start of the regular season, right? That should be enough time to adjust, I would think. Now, I don't know that it's enough time to adjust, practice, you know, stay finely tuned as a team, which you're gearing up towards in preseason and with training camp and everything. But they should at least be rested enough for the start of the regular season.
How do you think the Chinese feel about this Kobe-less Laker team? Are they just bummed out? Is this a massive disappointment to them? I feel like I would be bummed out.
It would have to be. I mean, he's there, so they at least get to see him. But not being able to see Kobe play, that's got to be a huge blow to what they're doing.
He's crazy popular over there.
Oh, God, yeah.
He's so popular over there. Kobe is most popular in two places. Among NBA players, based on the recent survey of who you want to take the last shot, and in China, those proportionally are the two places where Kobe is most popular. It is insane. He gets the most cheering doing nothing of anybody on the court.
Yeah, I mean he's been a really good player in the game of basketball. I don't know if you know that.
are you breaking news?
Yeah, I think
big,
I am.
Big if true.
He's been I would say above average. Well above average.
Yeah, I would say above average.
Yeah.
Certainly the most covered Achilles injury in the history of sports.
Yeah, probably. I don't remember how big the Dominique Wilkins news was, you know, 20 years ago, but it's up there.
That,
for sure.
That's what the Laker fans are clinging to. I'm seeing so much of that Dominique Wilkins reference from the Laker fans. Like the one instance of an Achilles injury not ruining a guy's career that oddly happened a long time ago. That is the bright light by which they will guide their hopes. And who knows? I hope it works out that way too. But it's funny that I just keep hearing about Dominique Wilkins in reference to this Kobe situation.
Yeah, I think Kobe's going to be fine. I don't know that Dominique is... I mean, I guess there aren't that many... you know, reference points for this kind of thing. But Dominique came back and he was good, but he wasn't great. And they need Kobe to be great, right?
Yeah, they need Kobe to be great. Then again, we have better technology. This you know, this comes to the point where we're all speculating on things we don't know. I mean, I increasingly find myself as a non-medical professional speculating on what their bodies are going to do, and it's just such a crapshoot. How do I know? I mean, I am pessimistic about Derrick Rose because of the way he moves, but I don't have a degree in telling you why or how it's like that. But I feel that way with Derrick Rose and a little bit with Kobe, where I just see so many other players. They have the Achilles injury, and they're kind of ruined. And, you know, at the very least, he needs to take some time off. He can't just come right back and be okay.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's funny that I feel like you read one article on Slate about toe striking and heel striking when it comes to running, and then from there things got out of hand. That's when you became a medical professional.
It's far more complicated than that.
Runner's
it's far
world?
More complicated than. Oh, well, I mean, I've read Born to Run and Runner's World and all that, but it's far more complicated if you really get into it than just striking with the forefoot or the heel. There was even a recent article in the New York Times about how you're applying the same amount of force to your foot no matter how you do it, and it's hard to escape that. In the case of Rose, it's more that heel or toe, either which way, you want your foot to be underneath your body when you're running. And with Rose, his foot is far out in front of his body when he's sprinting. So all that momentum is just crashing like a tidal wave into his leg and into his foot. It's bad news. You know, we forget that he was racking up the injuries before he tore the ACL, and that when he did tear the ACL, it was because he was moving in a way. It wasn't a freak injury. It's because he lurched to the side and broke on his heels to land. And I just don't believe it's sustainable. I think we're in for another injury-plagued season with Rose. I hope it's not true. That's very negative. I'm not rooting for my own prediction in this instance, but that's how I see it.
That's where I disagree with you, because anytime someone makes a prediction, they hope that it happens. That way they look smart.
That is Rose voodoo doll.
Yeah, you're just poking the ankle, poking the knee. What season-ending injury do you think it is? Will it be a knee? Will it be the same knee? Is it an ankle?
Now this is getting creepy.
If you're gonna call your shot, you gotta call your shot. Like, you gotta pick the field, you gotta pick the pitch. Like, you gotta know.
Okay, let's try to get the order like a lottery number. I think there's going to be some plantar fasciitis. That's going to be the first one. There's going to be some of that. There's going to be two ankle sprains and an ACL.
Oh my god!
Not hoping for any of this.
What's the time frame on this? What game is he out?
I don't know. What game is he out officially?
Yeah.
Let's put it at, I don't know, the 57th game of the season. Who knows?
Well, we'll look forward to that.
This is emotional hedging. That's what this is, Zach. It's that I can feel a little bit better about being right about something that I don't want to happen.
Yeah, for sure. And if it doesn't happen, then you're like, yeah, thank God I was wrong. You get to pretend that you wanted to be wrong.
God I was wrong.
Yeah, I think that... That's something that bothers me, is the whole hedging that we do. And I do it as much as anybody because...
Oh, we're just these... We hem and haw like crazy out here. Whatever happened to opinions? I feel as though the hot sports take has gotten so scorned and so uncool that we've gone too far in the other direction and nobody has an opinion.
Yeah, well, I think it's important at least for a lot of people that do what we do, to realize that we don't know what we're talking about. It's a lot of guesstimating, and some of us are very good guessers.
Maybe that's what you think. I want people to know that this is from on high, in my information. I agree, but I think we should be able to have these. You should be able to have strong opinions while also saying, I can learn from my opinions if I'm wrong, and I can be wrong sometimes.
That's the key.
I think that's possible.
That's the key, is the vulnerability. You got to be vulnerable, yes, with your strong opinion.
I think I underrated Carmelo Anthony for a long time, and he changed his shot selection last season, and he's probably a better player than I gave him credit for.
Oh, he's a much better player. He's a much better player than you gave him credit for.
You're not even going to go, hey, Ethan, good job. Good job of admitting you were wrong. You know, you're just going to pounce on it. You're just gonna throw me an anchor.
Oh, why would I throw you a life preserver on something that I battled you for so long? It just doesn't make any sense. That's not how you sweep the leg.
It's possible. I've probably underrated the Spurs for recently, and probably underrated Tony Parker, who's progressed amazingly as a passer, and now might be the, you know, we've been trying to figure out who the fourth best player is. That's the big NBA mystery. He might be the fourth best player in the league.
He's not.
Probably that one too.
Wait, who's the third?
Well, it's just, I feel like there's a consensus on who the 1 through 3 is. That's what's so interesting about it to me. Not only do we have a top three, but we have an order that we've decided that we all agree on, which is LeBron, Durant, CP3.
Okay. I feel like we get into this every time I talk to you. How is Dwight Howard not above Tony Parker?
Because he hasn't been himself since 2011. I don't understand how he... Like, what is there to say about it? I'm boldly predicting that Anthony Davis is going to be better next season. Could be wrong, but that's my prediction.
Then Dwight Howard?
Yes.
You heard it here.
Not first, I tweeted this. You heard it here second.
I think that you're forgetting that Anthony Davis was really not that good on defense last year.
Hey, I'm not including – here's the thing. I can win. I can win this argument if we just keep it to the advanced statistics and ignore defense. That's what's important. That's how I plan to gain victory out of this.
Okay. I'll concede
that Dwight Howard holistically will probably – be better in terms of plus minus and overall defensive impact. I believe Anthony Davis will be better on offense this season than Dwight Howard.
Wow, I'm
predicting better PER, better win shares per 48. That's my prediction.
That's a hot take.
It's pretty hot. It's sizzling. It's sizzling, and I will back away from it. I will backpedal like an NFL cornerback. There's a good chance of that happening.
I gotta tell you, we've been talking for like 35, 40 minutes, and I really don't feel like we've said anything.
I feel like that too, and I also sense that the Skype connection's been very poor. So not only have we said very little, but the very little we've said will be chopped out of this. So it's it's very. I don't know.
The Skype has not been strong. I'm gonna edit it the best I can, which means it's probably gonna take me 3 hours to post this podcast. I don't know that we've actually talked about it. Is there anything you want to actually talk about before we hang it up?
Maybe. I kind of it's a little bit dangerous. I don't know. I don't know if we should bring it up. I don't know if I should talk about it. I don't know. I'm a little concerned.
What is it?
I mean, it's sort of like it might be a little the realm of politics. It might be the Popovich quote, how I don't necessarily agree with it, and how you do, and how maybe a little NBA politics is a little bit dangerous, Zach. I'm a little, it's handled with care.
It is a little, but what the hell?
Yeah. So I'm assuming that you agree with what Popovich said a couple days ago when the government was still shut down. We now have a government. It's not shut down anymore. That's cool. And I didn't like the neutrality of Popovich's statement and how he was talking about it as it was little kids fighting over their toys. And I only bring it up, I would have forgotten about it, but I got a very interesting response. When I said it wasn't a particularly smart take by Popovich, if Popovich is smart, his opinion on this issue that he's voicing isn't particularly. I got a lot of backlash from it, and it almost seems as though there's this kind of daddy worship when it comes to Popovich, that even if you're just vaguely saying that you disagree with something, I got a lot of, Popovich knows more in his fingernail than you know. How, what do you know? You write about basketball. And I was thinking, yeah, and Popovich coaches basketball. I mean, I would not compare my basketball knowledge to his, but it's odd to just assume that his comment on a political matter is superior just because it's Popovich. So the backlash was interesting to me. I just feel as though you're not really saying anything that trenchant about politics if what you're saying is that everybody sucks. That's my take on it. And I also can say that while also understanding that maybe everybody does suck, and that's a legitimate opinion as well.
I think with him,
I certainly understand that perspective.
With him, it's a pregame scrum, so I don't know how in depth to you want him to go in an answer like that. I think what he did was just kind of summarize what he's feeling, what I think a lot of people are feeling, and that there's
frustration
in that it's not about the job they're elected to do, but it's about, you know, just kind of a pissing contest between who gets to play with what toy, right? And so I think like he's doing is summarizing.
He's not going to get into the Hastert rule. He's not going to complain about the overuse of the filibuster.
Right.
It's the pregame. He's going to give kind of cliff notes on his emotion. I just feel like in this country, and this gets back to the hot takes versus hemming and hawing, as we do with sports, we do it a little bit with politics, where we don't want to necessarily offend anybody. So then we just take an ultra neutral approach. And I feel like in politics, at least, it sort of perpetuates the problem. Because if you say that everybody sucks, then there's no punishment for actually sucking, and there's no real credit for doing good stuff in that whole morass. So that is why I would disagree with Popovich, and also a little fiery Facebook post from you, Zach.
Yeah, I think that when people decide that only one side of this is at fault, that it fails to recognize that the system as a whole is broken. That doesn't mean there aren't good individuals and good parts of it, but the system has become just too mixed up.
I think that will be our grand compromise on the issue, is that everything is broken. It's just everything isn't great right now. That is where I can agree with. And I also love connecting you and Greg Popovich, like as though you two come up with this.
Is that we discussed this before somebody else asked him a question when I was thousands of miles. I think you guys
collect wine together,
right? Well, actually, oh god, I would love to. I would love to go wine tasting with Pop. I think that the problem is that, and you can relate this back to sports, is that people have been conditioned to be polarized on every issue, and that one side is correct and the other side is wrong. And like we were talking with the hemming and hawing, there are a lot of issues where there's so much like gray area that.
Mm-hmm.
That to say only one way is correct, to say only one way of viewing basketball or one way of viewing politics or whatever, viewing the country, is correct is wrong. Because it's ignorant, really. And so I think that to not leave room for compromise, room for improvement, is we've gone just in so many aspects of sports, of politics, of whatever, and it turns us into these mindless monsters like zombies who don't think outside of the situation. And that's more my point of it. It's like, okay, you say this side's right and this side's wrong. Well, what if they're both wrong?
Is it weird that I think it's more of a problem in sports than politics? Just because it seems as though with sports, it's not... people have their ego put into it in a different way, where they're living vicariously through these teams and these players, and that completely skews their perspective, and they get crazy, rabidly crazy about something like Kobe being ranked 25th after an injury. It seems to be almost a bigger problem in the sports realm than the political realm.
Yeah, I mean, well, I think there's so many layers to the political realm in terms of local politics that become more regional, that become, you know, national. Like, I think that's true. There are different levels of politics in which this is much less prevalent. When you get to the national scale, then it's much worse. But in terms of when you go sport by sport, it's just all it doesn't matter if you're going baseball, football, basketball, hockey, soccer, whatever. It's all polarized all the time now.
Yeah, well, it's a little different because at least with sports, thank God they don't matter so much. That's also good. But people will really love what they support. They will love it. They will, like, I love Kobe Bryant. That's why I'm caping up for Kobe Bryant. Well, they won't say that, but that's what's driving this. You know, I love my team, and that's what's fueling my rage at this other rival to my team. But in the case of politics, it's a little bit different because people are more negatively oriented. If you look at the polling, it's not as though conservatives love the Republican Party. It's not as though liberals love the Democrats. It's more that they hate what's happening on the other side. With sports, I feel like it's a little more driven by the kind of vicariously living through this thing that they love as opposed to politics.
Yeah, no one's in their back as a child counting down the clock of a government shutdown. and the filibuster they'd be using.
Some people are.
Well, maybe some people are. Most people are trying to hit a game-winning three.
I would agree. I would definitely agree. And also, you know, it's easier to live. Frank, this is a little weird place to take it. It's easier to live through athletes because they're better looking than politicians. No one's living vicariously through Harry Reid.
Oh, I have literally no response to that.
I just think it's an underrated factor. It makes people very uncomfortable, but being good-looking does help you get support, not just from the opposite sex, but just from people. We know this. You're more inclined to get a job if you're better-looking. You're more inclined to have the respect of your peers.
We didn't,
you know, if
you and I
if Allen Iverson is ugly, is there this massive cult around him who still support him to this day and on Twitter will get mad at you if you talk about him, if he was hideously ugly, if he looked like the guy who stepped over Tyronn Lue. Apologize to the Tyronn Lue. I hope he doesn't work for CBS. But I don't think that happens.
He's an assistant coach somewhere. I think that's obvious about the looks part. You and I didn't get all these Twitter followers just for our opinions.
Oh, no. That's why I just shaved my goatee. I think that I really have to help up the Twitter followers, and that was the best way to do it. That was a large component of it. That would be so funny. That would just break. That would break ESPN. That would make people so uncomfortable, and yet they'd have to comment on it if there was some sort of NBA rank for good-looking NBA players. My God, would that make people uncomfortable?
I have always found – I think there is some credence to this because I've always found, at least in my days of running a live chat, I was astounded at how often ugliest player was the topic that someone tried to bring up. Because to me, yeah. I just – like, I don't know. I don't care. there are good players. There are bad-looking players. I'm more concerned about how they play than how they look.
Yeah.
But that was just always a weird thing if people would bring that up all the time. I just thought, that can't be the topic that's on your mind right now. And sure enough, it was.
There was a Clipper team that Kamen was involved in that was known for being an ugly team, and that was a topic for a while. It's fun when it's an ugliest team, but you know on the other side of that the people have opinions. I remember it was brought up years ago when I was in college. I had this friend, and he might have been a little bit, let's say, sexist, maybe not the type to be the guy who wants to discuss best-looking players, but this female friend of ours started talking about it, and she started listing her favorites, and he couldn't help but jump in to either disagree or agree. He was compelled to.
That's the next wave of ranking NBA players. It really is. I think we're much like we're waiting to see the influence of overseas and how it affects the business model of the NBA. Years from now, this is going to take over.
Hot or not. And it would be one of those things where people would complain about it and say, this is total BS. It would just be like the body issue where they have the naked athletes where people will go, I don't know about that, man. That's weird. But they're still clicking on it and they still have an opinion on it. And they still kind of want to talk about how Colin Kaepernick looks like that.
Sure.
Yes.
Yeah, I agree. I think you know, we're all still cavemen out there looking for a mate, right? We're all still judging up the competition based on physical attributes. That's all we are. We're just out there looking to continue the race.
You can reduce this back. It's funny. You can reduce this back to just how we're creatures. I just realized recently playing in my Y League that I've been doing the Eurostep wrong for a while. You need to, because you need to do the ball fake. You need to move the ball to the step you're faking with.
Oh yeah.
Because human beings are just like cats and dogs. We see a ball, chase the ball. That's it. we are animals at that
level. It's why the crossover works. It's yeah. Because they're watching the ball. They should be watching the hips.
But there's a ball. There's a ball. Right. I think that's how dogs talk in my head.
it's a shiny round object that we're just all waiting to play with.
Gotta get the ball. Gotta get the ball. so that's why that works.
I think that's enough for today, right?
Yeah, I think it is. Hopefully, some of this will be usable with the choppy Skype. We'll figure this out in the future. I hope this car situation works out for you. I'm pulling for you, and thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Ethan.